Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. And I've got Robert Eggington on the line, and I'm in the process of dialing up Selena, the other half. Robert's talking to me from WA. Robert, welcome to the program. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Tiger. I'm well, thanks. And good morning to all the listeners as well.
Tell us your mob, your country.
We're doing well here. We're still struggling in terms of, basically keeping Dumbarton going here and keeping things alive, Tiger. So it's as is in Noongar country, always a struggle.
Yeah, tell us your mob, your country, Robert.
Well, I'm a Bibbulmun man from the southwest of Western Australia, and collectively our people are known as the Noongar people of the southwest of Western Australia, Tiger.
All right. And good morning to Selena. Selena, how are you?
Good morning, Tiger. I'm well, thanks.
Very good. Welcome to the program. It's great to hear you guys back on the program again to give us a report from your side of the country. Tell us your mob, your country, Selena.
Thank you, Tiger. My mob is the Whadjuk Balladong mob of the southwest here. We belong to the, Bibbulmun Nation, but also we're known as collectively as the Noongar people of the southwest. So it's the Balladong Whadjuk people.
Okay. And Dumbarton is the organisation that you guys have been running?
Yes, we've been running Dumbarton for over 28 years, situated at the Clontarf site in Perth, Tiger.
28 years. You and Robert have been running this Dumbarton for 28 years.
Yes. Fine, yes. And in those 28 years, as you can imagine, we've built up a very important and historical history of the work that Dumbarton has been involved in over those 28 years.
By gee, there'd be a lot of history, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information gathered, like you're saying, over those 28 years. That's fantastic. Well done.
Now, yeah, absolutely.
There is a struggle, or you've got some challenges there regarding continued operation?
Yes, and it's recently, we're at a time in our history where we're really feeling the, in dire straits of the organisation folding. And so at the moment, we're battling to keep the organisation operating, Tiger.
Mm. Robert, what is it that the organisation does? What's its main role?
Well, the organisation, Tiger, has changed its agenda over those 28 years. Those 28 years of Selena has reflected on really creates Dumbarton to be what one might call an intergenerational organisation. So, a lot of the, even the grandparents and the parents of, younger people who utilise the services of Dumbarton now, they're, older people had utilised those services some 28 years ago. So, of course, in that period of time, the agenda has changed in terms of the initiatives in which Dumbarton is prioritised in our community. We've been fortunate, Tiger, that we've been able to create agendas that address the needs in our community as those needs are expressed. So, it's not an organisation that's got a fixed agenda like the medical service or the legal service or, a childcare agency. Dumbarton is an administration that's based on cultural empowerment of our people, and of course, as opposed to profiting from a product commodity, in which obviously a lot of initiatives do in terms of, you know, our culture and our spirituality. But we were very conscious of the fact that our culture was so precious to us that, yeah, we didn't want to get into a profiting or a marketing of that culture. So we used it for power and for healing. And, of course, Dumbarton is also very well known for our advocacy roles, you know, initiating rallies and protests in terms of our human rights and, you know, our and issues such as Aboriginal deaths in custody. Recently, obviously, our rally centred on the massive pandemic of Aboriginal suicide here in Western Australia and the incarceration rate. So Dumbarton's been a very proactive organisation on the coalface and the front lines of our community here in Western Australia. And as Selena said earlier, Tiger, at the moment we're up against the wall. We're in a financial crisis and we're under attack and siege by government. And some time ago, again, as people would be aware, at Clontarf, the title deeds were handed over to the Indigenous Land Corporation from the Christian Brothers. And we only found out yesterday that the Christian Brothers have changed the locks on our gallery doors, and also the fact that, you know, we've had rent increases of 350%. So it's a ways in which the IOC is starting to smoke us out.
Not good news, Robert. Not good news at all.
Well, not good news on the eve, Tiger, of, you know, returning from Geneva, where me and Selena had met with the World Health Organization, and, you know, we had brought to their attention, obviously, and concerns through their mental health units and through their alcohol and, you know, drug and substance abuse units, the issues of our people's concern and their situation with these challenges, Tiger. And, you know, we had spent a lot of time talking to, I think it was over 2,000 people over a three-day period in Geneva. So, yeah, getting back here to Perth and, you know, of course we knew these problems were, you know, erupting and starting to happen with the IOC, but I didn't think that they would take the extreme position through Dr. Dawn Casey in terms of changing the locks on our gallery, which includes our keeping room, Tiger, with these objects in which I'm referring to in terms of the, you know, the sacred and the significant material. We have over 300 of those objects in our keeping rooms that we've repatriated over a period of those 28 years. And, you know, to have to, I suppose, struggle and to be able to, you know, try to justify the maintenance of that gallery to ILC is just, to me, an absolute diabolical situation. But, you know, we've just recently presented to the ILC a petition that we had up on the internet. We had got over 1,051 signatories, and, you know, those signatories were from right around the world in reference to our gallery and Dumbarton, and keeping our organisation alive. And we presented that to a meeting with the ILC representatives on the same day, or in the morning of the afternoon, and we say it changed the locks on the gallery.
Were you notified beforehand that that was the plan? What,
no just notification at all, Tiger, and that's the devastation. We've had a number of letters that have, you know, been sent from myself to Dawn Casey and back, and of course those letters were, you know, identifying the financial issue of Dumbarton, and I suppose trying to convince the ILC that, you know, there's more in our community than just an emphasis or a priority on the economics, in which they're, you know, most, I suppose, sort of active on in terms of what their roles are. And, you know, I was saying to the ILC that, you know, they should have an active role as well, Tiger, on the preservation and the maintenance of organisations like Dumbutung, and maybe not so, you know, much worry about the economics or the finance in terms of what these organisations can or can't generate. And, you know, over here in Western Australia, the ILC really is about just economics, capitalising on the industrial part of our land and culture without really looking at, you know, the types of issues and initiatives in which organisations like Dumbutung uses our land for and our culture for. It's not all about money in our community, and, you know, these corporations like the ILC seem to emphasise and put more interest on the values in which white people term to see our land and culture, Tiger. And to me, that's devastating. It's a really, really sad day over here for, you know, myself, Selena in particular, of course, but our committee and the Western Australian community. If Dumbutung is lost to our community, that will affect Aboriginal communities right across this country. And, it's, you know, I can't help but to think that that's in line also with a lot of the decisions that the state government's making here in terms of the closing down of the 130 Aboriginal remote communities, which is going to be a diabolical and have a diabolical outcome in terms of the lives of those people who will be obviously moved into regional towns on the fringes and will be subject to all forms of self-destructive elements. And, you know, look, I think these governments and how they're operating in this country, there needs to be a revolution by Aboriginal people against their proposals and what they're doing here, Tiger. People have got to stand up and really, really challenge, you know, corporations like the ILC, state governments like here in Western Australia, and any other initiative that restricts and challenges our human rights as, you know, Indigenous people in this country. This is a shameful era which we're going through now. One of the most heart-shattering, I suppose, repercussions of this whole way in which government is entrapping Aboriginal people into this continued process, really, of genocide, is to see how many of our moderate academics are standing by voiceless in terms of their concerns because they're getting paid off quite comfortably by the governments while they carry out this genocide. It shatters and breaks my heart after, you know, working in, as Selena said, Dumbutung for 28 years, but collectively, me and Selena have worked in the Aboriginal community here for 34 years, Tiger. And to see it come to this, I think, you know, again, I mean, heartbreaking. It's a real concerning issue.
It's heartbreaking. I think when you mention revolution, it's got to be a revolution. There's got to be more people than just us First Nations mob, because the governments are affecting, are impacting quite negatively on broader than us, and the more numbers we get, the better. But look, back to Dumbutung and ILC. As it stands now, they've changed locks. So, what are you? Are you locked out of sections of the office, out of Dumbutung itself? And then there's the, you mentioned 350% increase on rent. Where do you stand at this point in time? What's the situation as we stand? Are you able to get into the place? Are you locked out? Are you only locked out of certain offices of Dumbutung?
Well, firstly, Tiger, we're still just on the tail end of a funding agreement with the Lottery West here in Australia, which is a government instrumentality, but it's not a government department. We haven't had government funding at Dumbutung for many, many years. So what's happened as a result of that financial crisis? The ILC's been privy to our financial position, and of course, these decisions that they're making are a reflection of that. And, you know, Dumbutung obviously doesn't fit what they call their master plan development for Clontarf, which is based on, you know, educational excellence. And, you know, where Clontarf is the major stakeholder, Tiger, is a Catholic education facility. And, you know, Catholic education really stands alone in terms of its capacity to resource its interests. And, you know, for the ILC to purchase land where the main stakeholders are, you know, Catholic education, that boggles my mind as well. But look, at this stage, you know, what they've stated to Dumbutung is that, we're not going back into the gallery. They're changing the locks on the gallery. They've basically have instructed Dumbutung that, you know, the sacred and significant objects are to be, you know, removed from the gallery. They've dropped off what you call a tradesman's toolbox, you know, that they have on the back of these utes, these big aluminium toolboxes. They've dropped a toolbox off at the front of Dumbutung. They said you could put the sacred objects into this toolbox, Mr. Eggington, and you can store them in the toilet.
Wow. Wow. How disrespectful and offensive.
About here is we're
offensive.
Talking about objects as important as was the Moses' journey up to Mount Sinai, where he brought back the Ten Commandments on the tablets. These sacred objects we're referring to, Tiger, in Kayana's keeping rooms are so old that those ceremonies no longer exist in this country.
They're quite significant.
They're the heart, if you like, of the understanding of the oldest practice ceremonies on the most ancient landmass on the face of this earth. That's how important they are. And look, to have a toolbox dropped off at our office by an ILC representative and be told to put the objects in there, as I said to him, the only place that we've got to store these objects if we take them out of that keeping room is the ablution block, is the toilet. And they said, well, we don't care where they're stored.
Wow.
Now, given that, Tiger, and the fact that inside that gallery also there's all the old Carrollup art history from the southwest, there's, you know, paintings and bark paintings from places like Arnhem Land that are so significant that, you know, they're treasures of our culture and of our spirituality.
Well, those sorts of things can't be stored just anywhere. They can't be stored just anywhere. They need to be a proper environment to be stored, those sorts of bark paintings and things like that. Otherwise, they deteriorate.
In 2010, Tiger, our gallery was awarded what they call a significant assessment by the National Library, the National Archives, and Prime Minister and Cabinet, which deemed that collection to be of a extreme historical importance to Australia and the Australian people. So in 2010, those departments basically gave that credence of recognition to the gallery. And here, 4 years later, we're being asked to pull it down and to basically do with it as we can. But what it does, Tiger, it takes away the opportunity, I suppose, to keep this presented to the public. And look, that gallery was the foundation to the Dumbutung healing programs in terms of building up our young people's resilience, building up their cultural identity, their knowledge in terms of our history, which creates a strength in them, which becomes a resilience to the very nature of the issues that are a pandemic in our community, like suicide and self-injury and issues dealing with, you know, even the young men through that culture. We would teach them, domestic violence and violence wasn't part of our culture, Tiger. And so therefore, it wasn't just a gallery to where people would come in and see things hanging on the wall and judge them for their, face value and how beautiful the art and the culture is that's in that gallery. Selena had, created a way in which we used that gallery, as I said, to create the strength in the lives of the young people, plus also the lives of the women who was going through Selena's healing program in terms of the Kutimara Quab. So it's a very vital and an important part of our service at Dumbutung.
Selena, would you call this, again, another attack on self-determination? It's another attack on First Nations people generally that we're seeing far too much of at a state and federal level?
Absolutely, Tiger. It is an attack on our people and our culture, and disempowering us as First Nations people. So, we see it as a way of making Dumbutung voiceless and trying to control or stop what we're saying in the community, and particularly challenging the policies and the direction that the government's taking over here in WA. And, you know, we're really concerned about those communities that are closing, and, you know, what's happening to the people. Because when we were up in Kununurra, the elders were telling us that what they'd done to Umbulgari when they closed that was place those people outside of Wyndham on mud flats. And, you know, they had the families and the children living on those mud flats, and the kids were being, you know, they were being coming sick. They were subject to extreme, you know, insect bites and mosquito bites, ending up in hospital. And, you know, the people up in Kununurra, Turkey Creek and those surrounding areas are afraid and extremely concerned and worried of what's going to happen with their future of a lot of those communities.
Sure, and so,
you know, and I'm really, really, as I've been telling everybody down here, really concerned of what's going to happen with those communities, because they, you know, talking to those elders, they feel as if their life is under threat.
So, Lena, one would think that the government and its instrumentalities might be looking for all the help and support they can get in trying to deal with the issues, in trying to, where you've got healing programs and things happening, one would think that they'd be trying to reinforce them or maintain them because of the state of affairs for First Nations people in WA, the richest state in the country because of the mining resources boom. But and the way they're just moving people out of Umbulgari and Kennedy Hill and places like that, and bulldozing down the houses and stuff, and then for Barnett to make the threat of closing down another 130, 150 communities, I mean, this is just outrageous. You've just returned from Geneva, where you've addressed quite a number of people. Do you think, is there any link? Is this payback for daring to step outside the jurisdiction of federal, state and federal governments in this country? How do you see it? I mean, I can't help but be quite cynical here, and I've been cynical for a long time.
Oh, look, no doubt about that. We've been seeing that for a number of years, ever since Dumbutung's funding started to decrease over the last 10 years, Tiger. So we're quite aware of that, of the government trying to close Dumbutung in regard to, you know, what we're saying in the community, challenging the government. So, look, there's no doubt in our mind that they want to close us down and get rid of us completely. And, you know, they know the work that we're doing right from the highest level right through the community. They know that the programs that we've initiated over the years, and they know, you know, that we're empowering our young people and a lot of community people. So, so you know, of course they want to close us, and they know that, you know, by us closing, that we can't have that that voice in the community, that a lot of our people are disempowered to voice. So, you know, we're that voice for the for the voiceless. So,
yes, an effective voice.
Of course, they want to close us.
Yeah, yeah, the government
Absolutely.
Has to stifle that voice.
Yep.
Robert,
yep.
You have a First Nations man over there in the Western Australian, in the government, isn't he not, Mr. Wyatt?
We've never heard from either of the Wyatts, be it either Ben Wyatt or Ken Wyatt. Dumbutung is such a political obstacle to governments, Tiger. Look, there's no black or what you might call Aboriginal politicians or parliamentarians that have ever supported Dumbutung. Like Selena has said, Dumbutung's voice, which represents those in our community that are the most oppressed and most silenced, is what the threat to the government is. And they've been for a long time, Tiger, trying to, you know, close down that voice and to obviously eradicate Dumbutung off the political and the cultural landscapes here in not just Western Australia, but here in this country. And, you know, it really did start from way back when we started to promote the campaigns that looked at our rights Aboriginal people to own our culture and our knowledge, and that was in terms of those intellectual property right campaigns I spoke about earlier. Mm. That was a threat to the fabrication of the industrialisation, if you like, of the policies that control our culture through government. And they were being exerted into our interest areas through bureaucracies like the Australia Council for the Arts, the State Ministry of Culture and the Arts. And, you know, Dumbutung has always been active in terms of, you know, ensuring that Aboriginal people had control over our cultural initiatives, and, you know, and of course, as we said earlier, that culture be used through initiatives to heal our people. And, you know, we didn't want to see and have never, you know, seek to pursue our benefits economically from promoting our culture as a form of theatric entertainment for middle-class white audiences, or creating it to become a tourist attraction. Tiger, we're a lot more than a tourist attraction or a mantelpiece ornament in this country. And I think, you know, again, it's sad to see the ways in which governments have been able to industrialise our culture, and to see our own people capitalising on colonisation and making money in terms of these ludicrous ideals like welcome to country and you know, these again theatric performances of our culture, and you see all these white people sitting around applauding whilst on the outside of them auditoriums our young people are killing themselves, our young people are incarcerated whilst they've taken our culture and separated that from our life and our realisms, and they've turned that into a propaganda of entertainment.
Tiger. So the assimilation policies
will always fight against that.
The assimilation policies of the government have certainly had taken effect on a lot of our people. There are assimilated people that seem to feel comfortable.
Well, they've nullified and they've pacified our cultural and our political resistance through these policies of government, Tiger. And again, you know, a lot of Aboriginal people that are moderately positioned in academics around this country and in the bureaucracies, and you just mentioned one now, Ben Wyatt. You know, there's a thousand Ben Wyatts around, Tiger, that are just, you know, basically positioned in very useless realities in this country when it comes to our, you know, human rights as Aboriginal people. Because, look, if they were effective, I'm sure there would be some change. They would want to make that change, but I don't think systematically they can. But they still take the advantage of the security and the wealth of the positions that they're employed in.
Yes, no, it must be a hell of a thing to have to come back from your...
Heart-shattering... Yeah, Tiger, when we arrived back from Geneva, this was even before we knew these locks had been changed on our gallery where the treasures of our culture is. As Selena said, we went up to Kununurra by the invitation of the elders to attend a healing program in Kununurra, and that was during the White Ribbon Day, the, you know, domestic violence against women's day. And the ludicrous reality, Tiger, was the night before the healing conference commenced in Kununurra, a young boy in the reserves known as the Ranch, just on the fringes of the town of Kununurra, he'd only just turned 12, had taken his life the night before the gathering. He had just turned 12 and he had hung himself in that reserve. And then, of course, only a week before that, there was a 15-year-old boy who took his life. We were then also on the phone of the day of the conference talking to one of the Sibasado members in Broome who had to fly back to Broome, he was telling me, that day, because of the fact also the night before his young nephew took his life in Broome. So, look, you know, when you hear about these statistics, if you like, or news about the pandemic of suicide in the Kimberleys and the Pilbara here in Western Australia, not long before we went to Kununurra, there was also that very young boy in Geraldton, young Peter, who had committed his suicide. He was 11 years old, Tiger. So whilst we've got all of these political challenges that affect obviously the suppression and the oppression of our human rights, and we've got all of our leadership invoked and provoked into, let's say, the very nature of what we were talking about earlier. Our young people are out here in the communities that are dying in a pandemic that I believe is going to have a massive impact on our future generations, and in particular that very important aspect of our human resources. And, you know, something has to be done about this this issue. And I think it does, as other people have stated. It needs international intervention, because I tell you now, Tiger, it's not going to happen in this country. And Aboriginal people, unfortunately, haven't got the political nor the wealth empowerment to be able to deal with this holocaust of genocide that we're seeing continuing today, probably more effective in terms of government policies and what they're doing to our people than it had been able to be perpetrated, even the open killing fields and the policies of the Native Welfare Acts that took the children away and institutionalised them into missions. I think what we're facing today is the most potent and the most effective strategy of their genocide, because, you know, this part of this process we can't even see happening. It's merging into our community and taking our young people's lives at a far greater rate than there are fatalities in the Gaza Strip, in the declared wars that every night you see on the media right around the world, the focus on, you know, the peace plans for Israel and Palestine, and yet we've got more young people dying in this country than there are fatalities in the Gaza Strip.
That's pretty serious stuff. Selena, what can...
Well, it's a secret war that we're in.
Yes, yes, and we've been in for a little over 200 years, and the dominant culture have failed to realise it, or, like you already said, we're voiceless. Our people are a voiceless sort of... it's very difficult to be heard unless you've got a name like Pearson or Langton or Warren Mundine or something, you know. It's just outrageous.
So
what can people do? What can listeners who would be listening to this program around the country, and would be, I'm sure they'd be shocked. I'm sure they're horrified to hear these things, because where else can they be informed, or how else are these people informed of what's really happening on the ground? And it's only through First Nations media, largely through First Nations media. Now, some of the listeners would be horrified to hear this. What would you suggest that people do if they're sitting there thinking, well, what can I do? How can I play a role? I've got to say something. I've got to do something. What do you suggest?
Well, it's probably the most single and complex question that Aboriginal people are asked by, you know, non-Aboriginal people is, you know, what can we do to help alleviate this problem? We want to do something. But, you know, Aboriginal people, it's not even, I suppose, fair, Tiger, in a lot of ways that Aboriginal people are expected to come up with an answer to such a question, because what we're talking about is a 200-year war against Aboriginal people in terms of the dispossession of our land, the disinheriting of our people from our religious belief systems. You know, we're talking about an incarceration rate here where Aboriginal people are imprisoned per head per population, by far the greatest of any other, you know, human race on the face of this earth. Our incarcerations here in Western Australia, our women make up 60% of the women imprisonment in Western Australia, Tiger. We make up 2% of the population. You know, you're looking at a pandemic of suicide where young people are again, you know, basically stating that this is a world they choose no longer to live in. And they take their lives in ages that could be still considered near, not just young children, but I've heard grandmothers call, you know, little 11-year-olds still babies of the family.
They are still
babies.
So,
you know, this atrocity, you know, I don't think Aboriginal people can declare, other than the issue of dealing with the government to determine, not a recognition in this ludicrous campaign based on the Constitution, but our rights to enter a treaty that's based on what Aboriginal people self-determine in that treaty, what's necessary to ensure our human rights are looked after and maintained in this country. And through that treaty process, I believe, would be the beginning of the possibility of changing around this Holocaust, Tiger. But if it doesn't, well, then, you know, the future And I'm at times known as a bit of a visionary into that future. All I can see is more plundering, more pillaging, more murder, more death, more pain and more suffering. Because if we follow the so-called leaders of this political world in the Western concept, and we put any type of faith in those people that you mentioned earlier, like Ben White or Ken White or Nova Peris or any of those Aboriginal people who have taken up positions in government, who declare themselves also like politicians as leaders, them leaders like, the Labor or the Liberal parties who are, they're basically the same party, Tiger. They're all white people. And look, those so-called politicians known in this country as our leaders will only lead us into further decimation. They'll lead us further into tragedies, into trauma, into suffering. Because look, their policies are guided and more emphasised on getting to the minerals in the grounds of Aboriginal lands, dispossessing Aboriginal people from the land, like the removal of these people from these 130 communities, is not for the betterment or the welfare of those people or the protection of those people. It's to enable industrialists like Andrew Forrest, Gina Reinhart, and those other mining magnates to rip out the heart of our culture, which is through these mining industries. And look, I'm going to say today, if I can, I believe as a Noongar man here in Western Australia, that our biggest threat to our survival in this country are industries like the mining industry and the way in which the individuals that control those boards, like Andrew Forrest and others, again, just dispossessing our cultural rights from land, raping our minerals, which are the bones of our mother, and capitalising in industry. And at the same time, their propaganda is indicating they're doing it all in the interests of Aboriginal people in order to enable Aboriginal people to gain a sense of employment and economics, whilst the vast majority of our people suffer from what these crimes are that are committed against. And this is a heinous propaganda of people like Andrew Forrest and them Tiger that are saying what they do in the best interests of Aboriginal people, and have got Aboriginal employment figures up to such and such on the mines. But look at the price of that in terms of our culture, in terms of our land, and what's come as a result of dispossessing people from the land that enables their mining companies to rape and plunder that land.
Most certainly. We're paying a massive cost for it. So, Lena, this is a fairly bleak way to be ending the year and even the beginning of the new year, but time doesn't really matter because it just all rolls out into our small time that we have, this space that we have, our existence is very small, and it just rolls on into the next generation and the next generation. But it's a hell of a bleak outlook on things. What I'm trying to say is it's really sort of getting down to drawing a line in the sand with those that have been so brainwashed and whitewashed by the system, and how they're propping the system up and trying to sell these policies of the system. And you've got people like yourselves and a lot of others on the ground that are really struggling to keep community focused and just encouraging self-determination, maintain the identity and keep pushing the self-determination. It's a hell of a struggle.
It is a hell of a struggle. And look, the government and most non-Aboriginal people know that they've got time on their side. And we First Nations people, we don't have time on our side because, we're losing our next generation, our young people. And we're, as grandparents, we're very concerned and fearful of the future for our grandchildren and all young Aboriginal children. What's their future in 10, 20 years' time? And so, as Aboriginal people, First Nations people, we don't have that. We don't have that luxury of time on our side because we need to come together and do something now. And as Robert said earlier on, we need a revolution amongst our people. And we need to now empower our young people to take up the fight and to instill that passion to keep that fight going, Tiger. And so, we're very fearful of the future, and particularly, the closure of Dumbutung, if it happens next year. But, you know, Dumbutung may fold as an organisation, but it's not going to keep Robert and I not. We're still going to be, fighting for the rights and the human rights of our people. And even if we have to do it through, being based in our own home, we'll still continue that fight.
The spirit of Dumbutung will live on.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And as we say over here in Perth, at Dumbutung's Maximus Mayor campfires burn forever, and that's what we'll be saying till the day we die, Tiger.
Well, we're fast approaching Invasion Day, another anniversary of the invasion. And over on this side of the country, on the day before Invasion Day, the 25th of January, is starting to be promoted as the last day of freedom, the 25th of January, the last day of freedom, symbolically or as it stands, when people are celebrating the establishment of the colony by the British, the 26th of January, it goes without saying that the day before should be seen as the last day of freedom. So it gives us another platform in which to promote and highlight the need for the continued fight for self-determination, and to try and highlight to the assimilated, our mob that's fully assimilated and selling government policies to it, to take a look around and just see what's really happening. To have those people talking about recognise and generation one, where they're pulling in our own mob to hand out the poison sugar, the poison flour, the poison water. That's what they're doing, and they don't even realise it.
It's like a political distraction, Tiger. It's a political distraction in which has been forced on our people to be able to pursue these idealisms and not, as Selena said, stand up in the absolute immediate to stop this oppression and these policies in which you are forcing our people into these hideous realities and incarceration in particular. And I think when, the celebration of, as you say, Invasion Day happens, to them Australia Day, I think when you look back on the film Utopia, and you look at the vox pops that are in Utopia, in which John Pilger had recorded for that film on Australia Day in Sydney at Darling Harbour, and the ludicrous comments in which, white people had made in terms of the celebration or the nature of the celebration of that day, Tiger, really does make, blackfellas wonder just what their constitution, if you like, of history really is and what they really think about Aboriginal people. I've heard by many Noongar people here, when they go down onto the Esplanade to take their children to watch the fireworks in terms of the Australia Day celebrations, they're basically, in some cases, told by the white people to move on, that they don't have a sense of belonging or don't belong there. So, this racism and bigotry in this country really excludes Aboriginal people from any form of recognition. So this recognition campaign in terms of the Constitution, I don't think we'll succeed anyway. But one thing in that not succeeding, the reality is Aboriginal people have got little time left to fail, Tiger, in terms of our position in this country. And I think Selena is very right, and when she says, the fear for the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren in this country, in a lot of ways, is what's causing a massive amount of stress and anxiety and depression for a lot of the older people. And you always hear of Aboriginal people getting very sick at early ages and passing away or are crippled for the rest of their life. And a lot of that is through worry and through, being able to determine that this future is a bleak future for our people, Tiger. Some people may be more optimistic in that sense and see a different future outcome. But if you look at the history and you look at where we're at today and these challenges that we spoke about this morning, if they are not rectified and there's an empowerment process to ensure that, you know, we start alleviating these statistics, you know, these statistics and this reality shows itself for what it is. It's genocide. Unless we, you know, somehow are forced to change that genocide process around, which is a strategy of the Western world to alleviate and eliminate and kill and murder all Indigenous peoples from this world and planet, well then, you know, as a race of people, our future can't be determined because we're losing a massive amount of people in our communities. And that's not even looking at the issues dealing with homelessness, unemployment, not having the right health facility offers in terms of our health status, Tiger, and all of those social issues. This is just looking at direct death from policies that are institutionalized in this country to wipe out our people as fast as they can. And history in terms of, you know, what's happened in the southern areas like Tasmania and, you know, the southern, you know, regions coming up through to the desert regions, there's been a massive campaign of 200 years to wipe out what they would call the so-called black troublemakers in this country, which is the urban Aboriginal people from the day they colonised this country.
The genocidal policies and the policies of assimilation are very effective and very much still in play. And it's time that more of our mob realise it, and more of the mainstream dominant culture, that more of them realise it, because they don't. I think the dominant culture doesn't realise just how seriously and negatively impacted on they are by colonialism, colonisation. A lot of people think colonisation finished in the first 50 years or the first 100 years or the first 10 years. Colonisation is alive and well today, and it's not only impacting on First Nations people, but it's impacting on the dominant culture as well, and they don't realise it. It's time that they opened their eyes and stood up against these policies and governments like this clown Abbott sits up and runs. And that's one of our big problems too, Robert. We got Tweedledee and Tweedledum down in Canberra. I mean, even if the Labor Party took power, wouldn't be that much of a change. Things would be much the same as we've seen in the past with Rudd and Gillard running the country. You know, we still had serious problems in First Nations community. So, Robert, do we? What are the options? I mean, one of the options is, I see, as being an older campaigner from the 70s onwards and stuff, is that we need to mobilise our mob. We need to be organising on the ground in our own communities, amongst our families. Is that where we need to go back to now to start? Because that's where we were in 1970 over here on the East Coast, from my memory, when I was 17 years old and started to, the community, the older ones started to identify the need for legal services and housing, some medical centres and housing corporations, started to identify the issues and recognising what the solution was, you know, how we fixed things up, and went ahead and did it. Do we need to go back and look at some of the lessons learned, or just do some of the things we did then, and that is mobilise and organise on the ground in our own communities?
Well, maybe, I think, Tiger, and I wouldn't detract from that, although I know that prior to going to Geneva, and for a long time now, there's been, you know, a lot of Noongar families who have come into Dumbutung, grandmothers and mothers with their young people, and particularly the young Noongar men, to whom are facing massive challenges of mental health issues and, you know, are very depressed in their life, Tiger, and are really screaming out for help. And they don't know where to go in terms of these issues and these health issues in which our people are facing today in terms of emotions and the psychology of their life. Look, medical services are fine in terms of physical illnesses, and I support the need to heal and to address physical sicknesses. And they employ doctors, but what we're looking at today is a very different form of sickness that plagues our communities. And we need, you know, healers. We need people who understand, have been through them challenges of darkness and chaos in their lives, to help these young people. And I remember Selena saying to a very oppressed family and suppressed family here in Perth before we left. And she said to the grandmother, the only thing you've got left to do, Nan, is to take your family home and to look after that family the best you can. It's now up to you. It's up to your family to look after your family. Because I think Selena understood and she became enlightened to the fact that the more that this family looked for outside resources to help cope with those traumas and those tragedies that were happening in their families, Tiger, the more frustrated they were becoming because they couldn't find that resource. And that resource doesn't exist. All of our funding, as we've spoke about before on this program with you, in terms of closing the gap, which is exploited by these huge NGOs like Anglicare, Centrecare,
Salvation Army,
the Red Cross,
mm-hmm.
and they've taken all of that funding and set up these little useless Aboriginal units inside mm-hmm. These huge corporations and organisations employed two or three Aboriginal people. But the reality is, Tiger, those NGOs don't address the issues by going into our community, and our communities don't enter through the doors of those NGOs because they're basically, in the city areas or just in areas in which, Aboriginal people don't frequent. And
they're more a part of the problem, aren't they?
Racially too, as well.
They are more a part of the problem than they are a part of the solution.
And the issue at hand there is that, of course, they've capitalised and exploited on the Aboriginal dollar. And those services aren't reaching the needs in our community. So, look, I think also, given your initial question, there's that issue in terms of our resources and what families are going through. But there's also the issue of the fact that I think in those years that you've just mentioned, the 1970s and 80s, Aboriginal people fought their human rights on political agendas. And, of course, that's important too, Tiger. I don't want to be misunderstood here, but I think that what we did by fighting our human rights on political agendas, what we did is probably relinquished our greatest strength, which was to fight those issues of oppression from governments on what was clearly our most strongest weapon, which was our religion and our culture, and the issue of the sovereignty of our culture as a practiced religion in this country, which was attached to our budja, our land, and made stances where people had given their lives over a 200-year war here in the forced occupation of this country, Tiger. And what we needed, I believe, to do was to really, exert our cultural and our religious rights parallel with our political rights. And I believe that then, as Indigenous people, we may have been a little bit further ahead in terms of our human rights in this country. But if we're going to sit back and wait for, the World Health Organization or the United Nations or Amnesty International or the International Red Cross to come here and to enforce this government to recognise and to offer our people a solace and emerging from this hell that we're in, then we'll be waiting until the very last person.
That's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
That's right.
It's not going to
happen. We're run out of time, mate. It's news time.
Very quickly, at where most of these Aboriginal academics and moderates are going, they're all on their way to the very, to the very institutions that nullify our
exactly.
Our struggle.
Mate, we've got to go. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate hearing from you and Selena. Selena, thank you very much. Keep up the fight.
Thank you, Tiger.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Yeah, thanks, Tiger, and again, Kaya to all the listeners.
Thank you very much. Just have a great day. And Robin and Selena Eggington joining me there, and very good to have them on the program again. Join me on Monday. Have a great weekend. Join me Monday for Let's Talk, our final week of Let's Talk for 2014.